just a matter of time, I suppose.
Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we're discussing the 2009 Zack Snyder film Watchmen, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash from the upcoming, in 2019, Almost Famous Minute.
My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes Podcast.
And I'm Dave Palace of 5 Minutes of Mystery.
Hey, great to have you, Dave. How you doing?
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on. This is the bright spot of my week so far. Look, very forward to talk about these minutes. I feel blessed when I got some good old Rorschach v. Police.
Yeah. It always put a smile on your face.
Yeah.
Even a little bit in last week, I was about ready to say it because that was the halfway mark for us. In the middle of last week, I think, and you know, it's around here where I feel like we're, you know, watching, doing it minute by minute, especially. It's like things are really starting to kind of ramp up here with Rorschach's stuff. I think,
yeah.
So this is the beginning of week 20 with minute 96 here on Monday, and it starts with Detective Fine instructing Rorschach via bullhorn, and ends with Rorschach advancing on the cops in the hallway.
I know this is the Watchmen version in New York, but it's like, man, there is a lot of pornography on these streets. Like, I was like, wow, like every store, it's like, we got naked women. No, we got naked women over here. Well, we got nudie theaters. It's like, and then we got a bar that you could drink and think about the nudie women. So I was like, I was curious if, like, you know, Does Moloch at any point in his old man, like, does he ever partake in any of this? Do we see him at, like, you know, like quietly walking the streets of these places?
Well, we see that he gets mail from, like, the Jesuit Fellowship Church or whatever. I don't know anything about the Jesuit religion, but I mean, and they may not be very strict as far as pornography goes or this type of recreation, but that might, you know, dissuade some activity like that from him. I don't know.
And it's like, all right. So Moloch's bit when he was a villain. What was his thing? Like he's like a bad guy magician or something.
Yeah, Moloch the Mystic.
Moloch the Mystic. Okay, that's his bit. Maybe he found God or something. So maybe he's living a clean, simple life now. But yeah. A dead life doesn't matter now.
It's all irrelevant. Yeah. But yeah, like you mentioned all the various signage and stuff outside. It's like, I think we either see, it might be next minute, but once we're outside, his apartment building is like nestled right in between not one, but two different like porno theaters, like straight up movie theaters, you know? So.
But I mean, like, I know this is like, you know, the 80s version of New York that you know, Alan Moore wrote and they depicted. And you see that in, like, the 80s and 90s movies, how, like, they show New York is like, oh, man, you don't want to be here. It's like before, like, they, like, kind of cleaned it up and made it, like, the more touristy that it is now. That's what I heard, like, back in the 80s and early 90s. It was like, I think that might have been, like, I think that is one of the things Giuliani might have done, is actually crack down on that stuff.
I think that was his big claim to fame kind of thing, was cleaning up Times Square. And I believe I've heard it reported that if you're a store, you have to sell so much non-sexual oriented material. So all these shops started, you know, selling like New York tchotchkes and, you know, Statue of Liberty statues and various, you know, junk like that. Mm-hmm. And a little bit over time, it just kind of ate away at their business, and they had to, it contributed, I think, to them closing up shop and helping to clean up Times Square, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean, I haven't been in New York in a while. I'm close to Philly, but that, obviously it's got to be, you know, better than it was back then. Just knowing nudie theaters. See, what kills me here is that, you know, all right, Rorschach, he's got a frame going on him right now.
Yeah,
cops are coming in, and he's preparing some kind of defense. But really, you know, the first thing I think of is there's a window right there. Like, why not just take your chances? There's got to be a fire escape that he can get down, you know? Because, I mean, I'm kind of doing, in my head, I'm like trying to do the geography of where the kitchen is to where the hallway is to the front of the building. And I'm like, whatever this is leading to, like, I would take a look out that window and say, can I get to, like, another building or something before, like, the SWAT fill this place up? Because, I mean, yeah, he's got stones that take on an entire SWAT force.
Yeah. Well.
Well, it's kind of like, I mean, if they'd decided to show Rorschach looking out the window, then that's an indication to me that Rorschach doesn't really know his surroundings that well.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. He's probably been here a bunch of times. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I think he knows. I always go back to a line from the movie Ronin with Robert De Niro. And he says, like, he never walks into a situation that he doesn't know how to walk out of. I feel like that's definitely something that Rorschach typically would, you know, subscribe to.
Yeah.
But in this situation, he let his guard down, you know, this one time in relation to Malik, and that's what got him, you know.
I mean, it's, and yeah, De Niro's character said almost the same thing in Heat, where he's like, you can't, like, or you can just drop everything and go in, like, you know, 2 minutes or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so I'm ready to talk about the SWAT. Are you ready to talk about the SWAT? You let me know when you're ready.
Okay. Before we get there, we're, you know, we started with Fine on the bullhorn, wants him to send anyone out unharmed. And then that's when we get Rorschach really starting to panic, and he starts running around, and it's more overhead photography that we've seen a few times now. And it's especially creepy with Malik just dead staring straight up at the camera, like overhead, you know? And I think it works really well here to show Rorschach scrambling around this tiny apartment, and then having, you know, it's nice that they've got this set that allows them to get high above the scene in order to film like that. So I do like the way they show him running around, kind of scrambling through the cabinets and everything.
I think it definitely shows the what's the word I'm looking for? Just how constricted that room is, because how half of them aren't even doors. They're just little curtains.
Yeah.
Just to save a little space here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And when he grabs, right before he grabs the, I'm guessing is hairspray.
It is. Yeah.
Is a Barbasol can. So it's kind of like this pantry has a little bit of his bathroom stuff in it too.
Yeah.
So it's like, he kind of, this is like, he might, for wherever his bathroom may be, it might just be like toilet sink and a mirror. Like, he might not even have, Malik might even have the little inset mirror.
I'm doubting he even has his own bathroom. I'm betting that the floor shares a bathroom.
Oh yeah,
he probably has to keep all of his toiletries, you know, in a convenient location to take him with him. I'm a little curious why he has hairspray, but you know, I'll go with it, because we need we need it for Rorschach to have as a weapon. But I
bet you that's like a 10-year-old can.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, it is like when he used to have hair and be the mystic, he like would do his hair up, and now it's like, there's nothing there to comb.
Sure. Yeah. It kind of zooms in, you know, and Fine on the bullhorn says, you know, I hope you're ready, hero. And then we get the nice dramatic zoom in on Rorschach and says, you know, when you are.
So really, at this time, outside the fact that the comedian's dead, really the only three practicing people with power, I shouldn't say powers, but heroes, quote, you have the comedian who is doing government work, right?
Yeah, and we're not even sure how active he is in that role.
Yeah, he could have been stuff. But I mean, he was that's what kills me about the comedian, about is that how, like, yeah, they do that act in the 70s. What was it called?
Keen.
Yeah. Where it's like, yeah, it's like, you can't be superheroes. But it's like, but he gets hired as some, yeah, it's like a, he just goes, all right, screw it, I'll be a mercenary. And then they're like, all right, would you like to do some commie black bag stuff? And he's like, you got it. Get the paycheck. And the and then now he's a CIA go boy. And then you have John, who is really apathetic to the whole thing, but the government kind of touts him around so the Russians don't get too excited. And then you have really Rorschach, who's just, you know, bucking the system.
Right.
Really, I'm trying to think outside of that. And honestly, I'm not really counting the new Watchmen comics right now because it's so outlandish that we're still not sure about what everything's going on in that dimension.
Oh yeah, talking about
Doomsday Clock. It's just so like I'm still going like, wait, what's where are we now? Like, I mean, it's cool, but it's kind of like I read it like I would read Star Wars fan fiction, you know. I'm reading somebody's Tumblr. Oh, that's cute. I don't take anything serious with this, but this is cute. But okay, all right. So yeah, I got nothing else I want to talk about Rorschach. I kind of want to say that for later in the week. Start getting some serious Rorschach time. But are you ready to talk about the SWAT?
The only additional thing I'd point out is just I really like the view from inside the cabinets.
They're,
you know, and these scenes not exactly depicted quite the same as panel by panel in the book, but they're certainly, you know, him rummaging around in cabinets is shown, and then, you know, some of that dialogue, you know, ready when you are, like you said,
yeah,
that's certainly right there too, or when you are, they say, I hope you're ready.
Yeah, I like it. There's a shot from outside, and it's the marquee over the one of the theaters, like next door, and it says "Super Porno Sex Combo Movie." Super Porno Sex Combo Movie, and I'm really fighting the urge not to make that the episode title for this this minute. You guys have to, it's your responsibility to give me something better than that.
All right. I'll see what I can do.
So why don't we talk about some SWAT?
I love that. Yeah. You're talking about aerial shots. I do love the aerial shot of them filing out of the back of the SWAT van right into the stairs.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But once they stack up, I'm immediately like, okay. Like they didn't, I get it. We're probably going accurate for the comic book here, and it's fine how that they probably illustrated it in the comics, but I'm like, this SWAT team makes no sense.
Okay.
Okay. Now, am I a police officer? Am I an officer of the law? No. So I have no firsthand experience. What have I played? For the last 13 years, I've been playing a lot of SWAT 4 and it's Elite Task Force mods with the Stetchkov Syndicate. And if anybody knows what I'm talking about, they know that's legitimately the best police sim we have on the market. It's 13 years old. That's how good it still is. And the teaser for this new fan made, but it's like a spiritual sequel called Ready or Not. I highly recommend looking at that teaser. It looks amazing. So the reason I'm saying these guys are kind of incompetent is first guy comes up with what looks to be a Ruger Mini 14, which I think is a little overkill. Why having essentially like an assault, like a long barrel of assault rifle for close quarters in an apartment. Right there at second 28, you can see it. Second guy comes up, and most of the SWAT team seems to have car 15s, which are like, from what it looks like, there are M16s. They work exactly how M16 were. They're just shorter. Like they're just, you can compare like their barrels, and it's just, you can tell it's shorter. So I'm like, I think these are car 15s. I can't tell. There's a guy in the back. I think he might have a different weapon, but it's hard to tell. And then we have the guy with the sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. And I see the sledgehammer. I'm not sure if was this panel like in the comic? I don't remember. Is this in?
Is this
shot for shot, like there's a sledgehammer?
To remember if there was a sledgehammer or not.
Okay.
So I know that it, you know, we have.
They're kicking it with their foot. Okay. That's what I see. They're kicking the door in with
his foot. Well, obviously, sledgehammer, you know, go bigger in the movie. Why not? You got Zack Snyder here. He's probably like, can we go bigger? Sledgehammer. I like that. But when every time I see, like, I don't know if it was like, if I don't know if it started with this, but I feel like the first time I ever heard of them using a sledgehammer as a breaching tool, I think was the 1980 Iranian embassy hostage situation in England when they sent SAS in. And okay. That's essentially where the sledgehammer kind of got famous, is where the SAS kind of grabbed a sledgehammer and were just using it to break the doors in easier. Now, I'm not sure in the 80s if they had like breaching shotguns, where you would just essentially, it's a big choke and you put it on the doorknob, right around the frame that you fire, and essentially the frangible hits the doorknob and it like doesn't affect anyone on, it's like, God forbid there's someone on the side of the door, it won't hurt them, it just will blow that lock out.
Yeah.
But how they're stacked up is really bad, because you have the guy with the sledgehammer, he's going to hit that doorknob directly from the looks of it. And I think, and it's like, all right, this is an old New York apartment. Clearly that sledgehammer is going to go through that doorknob. It's going to go through it like easily, like butter. And then he's going to be off balance. Even if we don't see what's about to happen, he's going to go whoop and fall through. And now he's in front of three guys having their guns pointed at the door. It should be is that you have maybe one guy in the stairs. You don't have anyone. What I'm saying is you don't have anyone directly in front of the door for the exact reason we're about to see. If you have someone on the other side of the door, they could shoot right out and hurt someone. Right. So you have guys standing at the door. Now, what he could do with the sledgehammer is he could stand off to the right where the guy giving the signs to him says, he could stand there and do a side swing into the door. So
sure.
You swing, or you could still come down the doorknob. What you could do is you could kind of put the sledgehammer on the frame of the door and then just follow it down. And then, bam, you hit the doorknob, continue through, and then you're not really in the way, and then you could have guys go in. And I still think they should have brought something more than just a sawed. I think they should have brought, like, shotguns and maybe even, like, you know, tear gas. Maybe even a beanbag shotgun, because they probably want to take Rorschach alive. They probably want to, like, you know, parade him through the streets, because sure. they want with the Keen Act, right, you said?
Yeah.
They want to push that. They don't want to just, like, yeah, we strung them up and killed them. Like, the police want to be like, no. We're going to put them through all 9 yards of the New York justice system. That's how I see it as. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of funny when they go, ready or not. He's like, yeah, well, you are. And really his plan is, I'm going to wait for them to almost open the door, and then I'm going to open the door. And really, like, Rorschach got lucky. Like, if Sledgehammer guy wasn't there, probably the guys behind him would have nearly just shot Rorschach. Like, I mean, Rorschach really got lucky. And then he did that. Then to have the strength to pick up Sledgeman and throw him into his team behind him. I mean,
oh, yeah. He, in very little movement, yeah, is able to hurl that guy. but that goes back to just enhanced, like, super strength that all these people have,
because it's
a movie.
It's a comic book movie. Exactly. Yeah. You allow it. But it just makes the cops. So you think cops are like, okay, 1-to-1 ratio. You would think these cops would act like New York cops. It's like these cops act like knuckleheads. How they're stacked up on this room here. And then you see it throws back, and then he has a complete opening. The guy at the door frame doesn't even swing in to try and take him out. He's kind of like, oh boy, oh geez. And Rorschach has enough time to get his hands down to start striking.
Right. I want to talk about, since you brought up the breacher, the breacher with the sledgehammer, there's a few different methods of breaching. Typically you'd have mechanical, ballistic, explosive, or thermal.
Yes.
So mechanical includes like lock picks, crowbars, hydraulic rams, sledgehammers, and then battering rams.
Yes.
Ballistic, typically shotgun, like Dave talked about, the shotgun used to blast the lock or multiple shots to the hinges to open the door. Then explosive, using various methods of specialized charges placed on the door. Some types of grenades are also used, and this obviously is the most dangerous method of breaching. And then you have thermal, which is uses a cutting torch to cut through a metal door, which this would be the slowest form of breaching.
Yeah, the mechanical is going to be the ones that works the most, because This is an old New York apartment. That doorknob is made of rust. It's just solid rust probably at this point. So they really could honestly, just done the solid kick in. Or, but yeah, like, yeah, you could have, you know, rather than big arc swing, you're right. Have that battering ram, have one guy probably go, well, bam, and that's it. It's an old door. I think when it easily went in, and then, yeah, you got the guys come in. Now, I'm not saying they, because, like, you know, it's 80s SWAT. I probably don't have any camera technology like we do now where they have, you know, the SWATs will use the fiber optics. They'll use essentially like a little camera on a stick, and they put the camera on the, and they can see. So, yeah, these 80s cops are not going to have that. But, I mean, what they do have, I feel like they used poorly. And, yeah, they gave Rorschach a great opening.
I want to go back just a little bit to the start of the SWAT, like, and just talk about the editing here, which I think is really excellent, because they transition from Rorschach closing the cabinet doors and the screen goes black for a split second. Then the doors burst open from the SWAT van, and we see the SWAT all pour out of the van and begin entering the Rum Runner apartment here.
I do like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then here we get a little bit more overhead, a little maybe to go with, you know, how we see Rorschach running around a little panicked in an overhead shot. Here we have an overhead shot of the SWAT team, like all in formation. They're, you know, taking on the, entering the apartment, and then it's like a pretty quick succession of them running up the stairs, getting their weapons ready and into their positions. And like all of this takes place within like 20 seconds. And it doesn't feel like a choppy, quick cut editing, like in a, say like a Edgar Wright flick, but it sort of feels like this team could exit the van and be in position within like 20 or 30 seconds. So it doesn't feel heightened in an unbelievable way.
If you replace the guy with the Ruger Mini 14 with a shield, I think he could have charged Rorschach.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, these SWAT guys, they look prepared, and then they stack up, and then they're like, hey, let's just stand all in front of the door like that so no one can really get a good clean shot on the murder suspect. Just saying.
Right, yeah. Eric, what do you got?
One of the biggest things that I noticed was with the music, the, I don't know if you want to call them cues, but also the tempos. I mean, there's just a lot of changing as far as those things go. It's not a you know, specific rhythm of a normal instrument. You got some odd instruments, I think, and just some odd time signatures that change around a bit.
Yeah, the music, I do like how the music drops down. The only thing you really hear is, I don't know, what do you call it? It's not chimes exactly, but the only vibe I get is like, it almost sounds like it's a, like an orchestra warming up. You kind of hear loose string. You hear these like loose strings of like, they're getting ready for something. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
Like, it gives you that build up, like, oh, something big's gonna come in. And it is, it's kind of funny how Rorschach really kind of subverts it, where he's like, oh, you thought the door was going to break open? I'm just going to open the door and give you a,
Nice. We've got, I think one of my last notes is one of the SWAT officers, and I think it's the guy who's calling out the 1-2-3, is played by Jason Schombing, and he's born in Philadelphia, so in Dave's neck of the woods, I think. But his Twitter bio says he's a Jersey boy living in Vancouver. So he, of course, he's been in X-Files, Smallville, and Stargate, and so I think that makes him an honorary Canadian regular.
That's interesting.
And shout out to Godfather Minute, because Jason here has voiced the character Marty Monk Malone in 4 different Godfather video games. And he's got
there's so many Godfather games?
Apparently.
I like you too.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I just wanted to call that guy out. but it's hard to tell which actor, you know, or which character he's playing because they're all in gear. Yeah. But I think based on his eyes and,
Here's,
I think it's the guy calling out the numbers.
So, you're thinking he's got dual citizenship then?
I think so.
Okay. Because is that an official rule? I heard about that. It's like you film in Canada, there's like a certain percentage that have of Canadian actors that have to be filled. Is that true? Do we know if that's true or not? Is that one of those like urban legend things? Not urban legend, but like one of those hearsay.
Oh, okay. You mean for a Canadian production, they have to hire so many Canadian actors?
Yeah, it's like it's not just like the crew or something.
Sure.
Maybe but on screen they want like a certain percentage of the actors to be Canadian. Like I mean, I don't know where I don't know if Dana or not Dana, what's her name? Gillian Anderson or David Coveney yeah. have any Canadian citizenship. But like I mean, so much of the X-Files for budget was filmed up in Canada.
Yeah.
That I think, yeah, a lot of the small actors you saw, oh wow, he had a small part in X-Files. I think it's like because they were like a small Canadian actor, and they got a bit part in an episode of X-Files.
And that could be maybe that's one of the benefits to shooting in Canada is the you know tax breaks or whatever the perks are that they give you for bringing your you know production. I mean, obviously, there's you know, in Vancouver is like Hollywood of the North, you know, and there has to be a reason for that. So they might have like a
Canada pays kind of, you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, come on up. We'll give you $1,000. Yeah.
But you have to also include this many, you know, people of Canadian birth in your production.
I don't know. So. Canadians are like, man, I don't know. They're attractive people though. I mean, sure. look at friggin' Ryan Reynolds, Alicia Cooper. I mean, the list could go on, but I mean, yeah, they're good looking people. And also, sure. I feel bad about saying because I don't know where I got it from, but there was a YouTube video where this guy went over Vancouver of how it is almost like it has a city of many different identities because it's been used as like Seattle, Portland, Boston, right. Like Jersey City. You know, sometimes they said like they would use it as like New York and then like put like a better like Hudson backdrop. Behind it, like post is like that doesn't look like the Hudson River. You know they'll do it in post. I think one of Jackie Chan's movies is called. I think it's Rumble in the Bronx. Actually, there was a Canadian mountain in the background at one point.
Nice.
They're fighting on a rooftop somewhere in like Vancouver, and some Canadian like mountain ranges in the background. It's like wait a second.
Nice.
All right, we're off topic. Yeah,
that's all right.
Yeah, I know.
Blame Canada.
Yeah, blame Canada. So. Detective Price, what was his name was?
No, Fine.
I'm guessing, I don't know. I don't know if he considers that this was going to be an easy bag because they think they got him locked down in this apartment. Maybe they have other cops in the surrounding like apartment buildings or something. You know, that's maybe one of the reasons why Rorschach doesn't seem to want to like get out to go to another one. But obviously he has a lot of cops. He knows Rorschach's dangerous.
Sure.
He's not just bringing like, oh, no, I got 20 cops just outside holding the perimeter. And then I'm going to send another like 15 or so in. Oh, a dozen just yeah. To get up close and take him out. But, you know, I should say take him out, but they, you know, I'm surprised there's nobody with like a beanbag shotgun. I feel like they would want to just like put a few in his ribs and get him down. And so we don't have to like, you know, drag out a dead body. Because these cops must be excited that you know, because I said like Ozzy dropped the ball on Rorschach, right? That's
Who?
Okay, fair enough. Huh? Fair enough. Fine. I didn't know what our word was on. Did we spoil things? But it's like these cops must be super excited. Somebody dropped the line. He's at Moloch's.
Yeah.
But how does Rorschach get out of this debacle?
Find out tomorrow. Yeah, I don't have anything else. We ready to call it a day and come back tomorrow, see what happens?
Oh yeah. I'm excited. Now I'm in. I'm watching this minute. I'm in for tomorrow.
So, Dave, tell us a little bit about 5 Minutes of Mystery.
What I do is I don't cover it like a minute by minute. I do 5 minutes. And I try to get at least once a month. I've kind of lagged. I've been caught up on some other things, but I do have a list of guests. I'm trying to get them through the summer. Everyone's being a busy adult. I get it. So I'm being patient. My next episode, I will tease here. I'm going to have Crystal Beth on. And nice. She just told me up front that she's busy. And I'm like, I will wait. Because I got her, and the 5 minutes I got her for are the introduction of the bowler. And I'm like, I will wait as long as Crystal needs. Because I want to talk about her and the bowler. And I'm very excited. I mean, so to the people who don't know, in short, I recommend... I want you to watch this film. Is what I'm saying, because it came out in 1999. It came out before comic book movies really exploded. I'm talking about the Batman movies, but the Batman Robin. I'm talking about like X-Men, Spider-Man, like when like Marvel got its act together. Right. This is pre that. This is like, what if you got Ben Stiller, Greg Kinnear, Gene Garofalo, William H. Macy, and oh gosh, what's his name?
Pee-wee Herman.
Hank Azaria.
Pirates of the Caribbean. I can't remember. Jeffrey Rush.
Yeah, Jeffrey Rush.
Rush. I mean, you get all these guys. They're all playing these crazy, kooky characters.
Casanova Frankenstein.
And it's just a fun ensemble film, and it exists in a universe, a fake city of Champion City, where it's just. It's like post superhero. Like everyone's a vigilante, everyone's a superhero, and it's kind of like everyone accepts it. It's a very interesting world to play in, yeah. And so I love bringing people on, and I love talking to people who've like never seen it. Movie came out in 99, so we're at, like the 19th anniversary of it now, and so I'm hoping by like next year, I'm hoping somebody talks about it. I'm so pissed. That you see Hank Azaria, you see Ben Stiller, you see all these actors are still getting work. It's not like they're like they fell into the ether. They're all getting work, and like no one brings it up. Like, hey, you know, comic book movies are a big thing. You're in a comic book movie that we think is underrated. Like, I would just love it if like Seth Meyers brought it up next time he's got like William H. Macy on for like Shameless season 20 or something. Be like, hey, remember when you play the shoveler and you're really fun? Let's talk about that. Anyway, that's me complaining. But rather than this is a very serious film, a lot of drama in this, we're just having fun with Ben Stiller and all our good 90 comedy heroes.
I love Tom Waits in that movie.
Oh my God.
Heller. Herkimer Battle Tank.
That's a Herkimer Battle Tank. It's the finest non-lethal vehicle ever made. Oh, yeah. It's just, yeah. If you want to see Blues singer Tom Waits. And even CeeLo Green and Michael Bay have little cameos. Come on down.
Dane Cook. He was in
He's the Waffler.
The Waffler, yeah.
Golden Crispin, bad guys of history. And Sean German and I, we believe we linked that character to his Cook character in Waiting. We think that's in the same cast.
Okay. Nice.
But yeah, so that... That's what I have. I have a little fun. And yeah, me and Sean, we do Groundhog Minute. And yeah. Groundhog Minute. It's a great film. But we're a comic book. We're a comic book superhero territory. I don't want to talk about filming the Groundhog right now. I want to talk about superheroes and comics.
We like your devotion. Well, all right. Thanks for joining us on Monday.
Yeah.
Can you come back tomorrow?
Damn right.
All right.
I'm ready. Ready when you are.
Okay, so this has been Minute 96 here on Monday. Yeah, great to have you, Dave, and hopefully the whole rest of the week here. But tomorrow, Minute 97, we'll be back. Until then, who watches The Watchmen?
We do. I know I do. Watchmen are over.